Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 15, Narada and Angira instruct King Chitraketu. Text 8. Deha Dehi Vibhagoyam Aviveka Krita Pura Jati Vyakti Vibhagoyam Yata Vastuni Kalpita. Translation. Divisions of generalization and specification, such as nationality and individuality, or the imaginations of persons who are not advanced in knowledge. There are two energies, material and spiritual. Both of them are ever existing because they are emanations from the eternal truth, the Supreme Lord. Because the individual soul, the individual living entity, has desired to act in forgetfulness of his original identity since time immemorial, he is accepting different positions in material bodies and being designated according to many divisions of nationality, community, society, species, and so on. This is the last portion of the instructions given by Angira Rishi and Narada Muni to Maharaj Chitraketu. So to quote some of the verses which were quoted yesterday, Bhunkte Prakriti Jangunan Karana Guna Gansangosya Sarasad Yoni Janmasu, the living entity thus follows particular paths, ways, by following the modes of nature. He's taken into various species of life. And that this material energy consists of two divisions, the superior and the inferior. Of the inferior, bhumirapo nalo vayu kamma no buddhi evacha ahankara mityame vinaprakatir ashtada. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. These eight comprise my separated material energies. But more important than that, aparya mitasvaryam prakatim vidhi me param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayam daryate jagat. Besides this inferior energy, Omariyam Dorjuna, there is a superior energy of mine, which comprises of all the living entities who are exploiting the resources of this material nature. They are sustaining that inferior nature. Otherwise, it cannot sustain. One person is born dead, another person is born alive. Why? Because the spirit soul is either present or absent. So, divisions of generalization, American, Indian, black, white, rich, poor, fat, skinny, even human, animal, plant, and specification. This is my wife. This is my child. This is my child that gives me a lot of trouble. This is my child that's well behaved. So many specifications. I'm a particular type of individual. But this is all Maya, because what is our identity? Someone. Jivara Sarupahaya Krishnara Nitya Das. Beginning, the first aspect of realization is the Brahman realization. Aham Brahmasmi. I am spirit soul. Knowledge. Knowledge means to know matter and spirit and the controller of both. This is the first one. And the second one is to understand not only am Aham Brahmasmi, but I am an individual soul. I'm not necessarily one with the Supreme Soul. Prabhupada defeats this by saying, just like you are Indian, the Prime Minister is Indian. Things equal to the same things are equal. That means that you're the Prime Minister. Well, this is the logic that people use, that yes, you are also God. No, it doesn't work that way. And then finally, the final realization, Bhagavan realization, and realizing yourself in relation to Bhagavan, Jivera Sarupahaya Krishnara Nityadas. I grew up in southern USA, and anyone who knows anything about the history of America in the 50s and 60s, one will understand that there was a lot of social unrest, racial prejudice. I grew up in a supposedly devout Catholic family at the time, and we felt that all human beings are entitled to equal treatment. And when I was going to school and I had all these very prejudiced kids around me making nasty comments about, you know, black people or, you know, whatever, I just couldn't understand it. Where does this come from? These people are so condescending. They're so proud. Of course, we know what happened when the British came to India. They thought they were super superior, and they were going to show those Indians, you know, who's who and what's what. You know, this mentality, hellish mentality, because they are situated in a bodily concept. What kind of knowledge is that? Someone want to say? Krishna says in the Gita, what type of knowledge is that? Huh? Maya Prita Jnana. Well, that goes a little further. That's those who are deluded to think that Krishna is a manifestation of the mode of goodness or something, and that you know, he's not supreme. Ultimately, the you know, undifferentiated Brahman is supreme. They're deluded living entities. But actually, in the 18th chapter, Krishna explains there's a certain type of knowledge that sees one undivided, you know, spiritual nature in all living entities, regardless of whatever type of species. And that is knowledge in the mode of goodness. And knowledge in the mode of passion sees that with different types of bodies, different species, even different varieties within the species, is a different type of living entity. Or that there's no spirit. It's just material things. It's a very famous verse that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srila Prabhupada quotes states, Stavara jangama deke na deke tara murti sarvatra haya nija ishta deva sporti. That the Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything mobile and immobile, but he does not actually see their forms. Rather, everywhere he sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. So he describes in this connection that just like one human being sees a tree. Okay, it's a tree, some vegetation, a manifestation of the material nature, the material energy. Somehow or other, this thing is living, just like algae in the pond, or you know, or fungus in the bathroom or whatever. You know, it's just living. You know, they can't explain it so much. The chlorophyll is there; it takes the sunlight, and then finally, you know, it may come from a seed, but the water comes there, and there's a little bit of food, and it grows, and the DNA is there, and it just expands, and it takes sunlight and photosynthesis, and takes the water and the elements for the earth, the calcium, the magnesium, the phosphorus, etc., nitrogen, etc., and somehow or other, it all comes together, and it just expands and expands and expands, and it's this tree. They don't think it's a spirit soul in there, you see, but the devotee, the self-realized soul, he sees, yes, this is a tree, but actually, this is a living entity who, because of his or her lusty mentality, has been destined to take this form as a tree and to stand there naked in all types of weather, the hot and the cold, and people come and cut its branches and carve things into the tree and bang nails into it and may cut the tree down, whatever. They say, this is a living entity. or in the case of the trees in Vrindavan, or the holy Dham, Navadvip Dham, that these are living entities, as explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th Canto, that who were originally in the impersonalistic concept of life, but now they have gotten the benediction to take birth as trees in the Holy Land, to render service to the Vaishnavas and to the Lord himself, and a chance for further spiritual advancement. This is described in, when Krishna and Balaram are entering the forest of Vrindavan, and the trees are bending low and offering their fruits and giving their shade. So this is what the Vaishnava sees. He sees a different thing. Just like it's described how Shariyam Yadavapnopti just chop you krama tishvara grihit vaitani samyati vayor gandani vashya. The living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life. His different conceptions are carried from one body to another, just as the air carries aromas. So, you know, when you're walking by Govindas, their wind comes and blows this amazing kitchen smell, all the spices, and you know, you can know what's going on. You can understand just by the aroma that's carried. You see, it's just like you're there, you see. But the experience from the kitchen is carried by the wind. So in the same way, the mentality of the individual at the time of death carries the individual himself, because he's left the body, carries him to a situation where he's going to get the mentality that he's engrossed in. And thereby, he gets a certain type of body. He has certain desires, seeing, touching, feeling. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha, varasanam granam eva cha, adishtaya manaschayam vishyam upasevate. Thus, he takes a certain type of ear, shrotram, a certain type of eye, chakshu, sparshanam, sense of touch, rasanam, sense of taste, a tongue, granam, a sense of smell, avacha. And therefore, he takes a certain body. These senses are grouped about the mind. So he gets a specific species. Imagine a species of life, the tongue of a snake, this forked tongue, or the tongue of an anteater. It goes down a long hollow log and scoops up the ants. So many different types of tongues there are, and the tongue of a frog catches flies, you know. And eyes, the eyes of a bee, it sees multifaceted, and some eyes are slanted vertical, some eyes are slanted horizontal. They can see way up or down. They can see from side to side. The bird's eyes are on the side. They can see what's going on either side. Any time, any moment, a predator is coming. Oh, fly away over here, over there. So many types of species according to the senses, the how one living entity wants to enjoy it. The birds can fly here and there. The fish can swim. Prabhupada was seeing the surfboard riders in Australia and in California and Hawaii. And so maybe, he commented, maybe next life there'll be sharks or something. They'll go surfing the waves, dolphins or whales. So there's so many types of species, so many desires to fulfill. 8 million, 400,000 at least types of desires. And so this is what happens to the living entity. Most people can't see this. So then the Gita continues that ukraman tam stitam vapi bhujanam bhagunanvitam vimuda nanu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshusha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spells of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge, he can see this clearly, jnana chakshusha. Yatanto yoginas chainam pashantyatman yavastitam yatanto pyakritatmano nainam pashanta chetasa. The endeavoring transcendentalist who is situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But one who is not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try. You may try sometimes. So many times we try to explain how it is that the living entity goes from one body to another. The people have this concept that life begins at conception. And of course they alter it to justify abortion. Life begins at conception and it ends at death. Or it begins at birth and it ends at death. And how can you see beyond that? Because their eyes are not trained in knowledge. They are eating abominable foodstuffs, associating with the modes of nature. Therefore, they're completely covered over. So actually, a devotee of the Lord, a Mahabhagavat, what to speak of a Trikalagya, a person who can see past, present, and future, a self-realized soul, a dhira, a sober person, a rishi, he can see what has taken place. In fact, when you go out on Sankirtan and you try to give Krishna consciousness to others, either you're preaching to students or you're approaching people one after another on the street or somewhere and trying to give them a book. We were speaking last night, Nityananda Pran and I, about book distribution. Sometimes somebody, they refuse. They say, oh, I'm not interested. You may think, oh, this looks like a learned man, you know, a noble person, an intelligent person, wealthy, whatever, and completely uninterested. So why be perturbed by such a thing? Rather, we feel sorry for them. You know, we're representing Lord Brahma, Narada Muni, Srila Vyasadeva, the entire disciple succession. Our position on Sankirtan is more important than that of King Indra, Chandra, Surya, Vayu, all of the demigods, with the exception of those specifically in the line of our disciple succession. We're representing the entire disciple succession. We're doing service as good as Narada Muni. We're in his line. We're representing Narada Muni and Srila Vyasadeva. So we have all of them in back of us. The securest position in the world, we always used to understand book distribution, is to have one of Srila Prabhupada's books in your hand. No position more secure. It's such a formidable, solid position. And if you're fixed in that consciousness, then you won't be shaken by anyone's reaction. Rather, you'll feel sorry for them. And we were explaining what propels one to go from one person to the next, to the next, to the next, to try to get them to get a book or to take to Krishna consciousness. Because the ecstasy that you get as soon as someone takes a book that I've been used as an instrument in Lord Chaitanya's hands, that ecstasy is so nice that, oh, I have to do that again. And you keep going and you keep getting rejected. That's okay. It's going to come. And then the next person who takes a book, wow, such an ecstasy. And it propels you to the next one and the next one and the next one. And you try to make the time between those times of ecstasy less and less and less. And so the Lord, he gives you realization. You're talking to this person. And this person reacts in this way. But you're trying to figure out, what is the nature of his or her maya? The person's giving this excuse. Okay, how can I counteract that excuse? How can I counteract that one? You counteract excuses two or three times. Sometimes, if you have the mentality, I really want to help this person. I'm not trying to defeat this person. I really want to help this person. Then the Lord will allow you to get through to this person, and the person may say, okay, how much is it? I'll take it. And that's what we want. So sometimes when you're out trying to benedict the conditioned souls, you can actually see where they're coming from, perhaps in their past life. You can see the modes of nature they were situated in. And many times you can see where they're going. You've heard it said sometimes that sometimes people look like they're dogs. Of course, it's not so prominent in India, maybe more now in places like Mumbai, but especially in the West. One thing one notices when one travels from the East to the West. In India, most of the dogs and cats are very straggly looking, very thin, skinny. Their hair is not so nice. They have sores all over their body. They're very wretched. But in the West, the dogs are very fat and fluffy and healthy and robust, you know, very happy. So we remember how Srila Prabhupada mentioned to us that one astrologer said that Nehru has taken birth as a dog in Sweden of a wealthy person. Maybe the dog of the president or whatever. Because of the mentality. Enough pious credits to get a very comfortable life, a very healthy life. Always enough food, nice cushions to sit on. You know, so many places, they have the sofa for the dog or the cat to sit on. They leave the television on for him, the radio, and they feed him the choicest meals from so many animals, you know. It's incredible. So that's the difference. So I remember we were traveling all over Southeast USA. Practically every town and village that was big enough to sustain a devotee with pedestrian traffic to constantly show people books. And I remember this one town, Kingsport, Tennessee. And this one baby, was his grandmother was feeding this baby in a baby bottle. And it was this dark purple, thick liquid the baby was drinking. I went up to the person. I said, "My God, what is that?" And the lady said, "Oh, this baby is allergic to milk. He can't drink milk. He gets some reaction. So this is prescribed by the doctor, liquefied beef hearts." And because obviously you know where this person was in the past life. This person probably was a cattle rancher or slaughtered cows or, you know, treated the mother cow very terribly, that he's destined. Somehow he got a human birth. I don't know how. But he's destined to not get the benefit of any milk products. But he's destined to, you know, drink liquefied beef hearts. Incredible. And there was another person in one town in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, which is famous for one of the towns in that area that's famous for providing chickens. They have so many of these long, long chicken houses. You know, when you're flying overhead, sometimes you can see all scattered about the countryside. You know they're growing chickens in there under hellish conditions. And this person, I approached the person to try to get him to take a book. And the person's hand was all scratched up, completely scratched up. I said, "What happened?" He said, "I catch chickens." He goes into the chicken yard. He catches the chickens to take them and put them on a conveyor belt. And then they go ahead and then they defeather them. And then they, horrible, horrible things. And so this person, you know where he's coming from. And you know what his destiny is if he doesn't get a book. This other man, he actually had some fingers missing. And he's had three fingers left. And they look like a chicken's hand. And you can tell this person was getting ready to take birth as a chicken in his next life if something wasn't done. It's incredible. You can see, just like I said, sometimes people in the West, they, you know, you got this one dog, he's very puffy, he's got hair like this, he's got a fat face. And then the owner, he looks similar, you know. Or this one lady has a very skinny dog, you know, and the lady is very skinny. She has a very thin face with a pointed nose and et cetera. You know, and you know, sometimes you know, they kiss their dogs. And it reminds us of somebody in the Srimad Bhagavatam, right? Maharaj Bharata with the deer. So, you know, and the person is preparing themselves for the next life. You might have seen this film about reincarnation, coming back, the devotees made. And they interviewed this one big, fat guy, very burly, hairy kind of guy. And he says, they interviewed him. They asked him, do you believe in reincarnation? He said, yeah, I think it's possible. If I wanted, came back, I think I'd like to come back as a big, fat cat. And I can sit, just sit around and be fluffy and enjoy life. So people are preparing themselves for the next birth due to their activities, and sometimes you can see it. And if you develop that vision more and you try to see the spirit soul, one can see a mentality. Just like many times, I can tell when some person, sometimes some of the most envious persons or very proud Christians, they think that they have the only religion. And you can just tell just by their face. The face is the index of the mind. Sometimes it's a little tricky. You can't always tell. But the face is the index of the mind. And according to the facial features and the facial expression, you can certainly tell the mentality, whether a person is lusty. You know, women can tell if a man is lusty at them or not. Or someone can tell, a businessman can tell if someone's very greedy and very envious, very vain. And so the face is the index of mind, and the eye is the window to the soul. By looking in one's eyes, one can understand, if one is trained, where is the soul? What is the nature of this soul? Sometimes in facial readings, they call old souls and new souls. Of course, we're all ancient souls. We're all eternal souls. We're all of the same age, eternal. No beginning and no end. But sometimes they use this term to say how long a living entity has had a human body. He may have, this is one of his first human bodies. Maybe he's very shallow in his vision. You know, there's not so much to see inside in the eyes. But sometimes you can see real deep into a person. And they're very thoughtful. They're very pensive, meditative. They've been around for a while. They've had several human births. They're trying to figure it out. They're almost at the verge of understanding who they are. They're ready for transcendental knowledge. So this can be trained in spiritual life. In fact, that's what the devotee does. He doesn't tend to see the external covering. He tends to see the nature of the soul. Therefore, we're always preaching to a people. Preaching means convincing. Preaching means giving compassion. It means that I can understand where you're coming from to some degree. And the more you speak, and the more I'm hearing you, the more I can understand where you're coming from. Therefore, devotee preachers, they have to hear the person. They have to converse with the person sometimes, depending on the level of the preaching, the stage of the interaction, how much cultivation has gone on. And they have to hear from the person. Where is this person? What defenses does the person have? What excuses does the person have? What modes of nature the person is situated in? What is the person thinking about? What means most to this person? Then you can understand how to respond, how to give a comeback, how to break an argument, how to appeal to the person in such a heartfelt way, how to appeal to the mind, the certain slant or maya of the mind, the misconception the person has, how to appeal to that in such a way as to satisfy the inquisitiveness of that person, how to get through, how to convince the person, how to be a friend. Everyone's looking for a friend. That's all we want. Everyone only wants love. In fact, it is said by one very in-tune psychologist that, in fact, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj used to repeat this, that every reaction from a person is either a cry for love or an expression of the lack of love. Everyone just wants love and a dear friend. Krishna is Sudhit. He's our real dear friend. Therefore, the devotee who's going out trying to break through these divisions of generalization and specification, such as nationality, individuality, a certain mental state, trying to break through, he's understanding where is the person coming from. He knows how to appeal to such a person. And if the person is very much in tune, has no material desires, and is pure in his display of compassion, and presenting, offering something sublime, something transcendental to lift the person up. If that person is pure in his or her presentation for representing the Krishna consciousness movement, representing Srila Prabhupada, his guru, the disciple succession, then that person is a direct manifestation of super soul. Then you become the Chaitya Guru, the Lord in the heart for that person, the external manifestation of the super soul, just as the Guru is said to be for the disciple. You become, the super soul is there in the heart. He's giving guidance. Upadrishtanu manta cha bharta bhokta maheshvara paramat meti cha pyusto dehe smin purusha para. Yet in his body there is another, the Lord, who is transcendental, who is the permitter and the overseer. He's the super soul guiding the wanderings of all the living entities. Therefore, in the Isha Upanishad, is described, Yasmin sarvani bhutani yat mayavubad bijanataha tatra kamoha kashoka ekadvamana pashita. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks and quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What is there as illusion or anxiety for him? He knows how to deal with it. He understands the plight of that soul. And one who can act purely, represent purely the Lord, he becomes the external manifestation of the super soul, the same super soul that's giving instruction all along, guiding his wanderings. Kavir manasi paribur swayambur yatati dadurchan yashvajashvata chapa samabhya. That the Lord is the self-sufficient philosopher, Kavi, who is there in the heart, awarding everyone's desire since time immemorial. And he's giving instruction how to come to him. But the living entity is too bewildered. His eyesight is there only on the material energy. And he cannot hear the instructions of the Lord. But if you're a pure representative, you can voice in words that spirit soul, that's poor spirit soul can hear. You can voice for that person. You can represent the instructions of the super soul. And you can spell out in detail what the super soul has been trying to tell that individual, but he can't hear. Now you're there as a representative of the super soul. That is our position when we're preaching Krishna consciousness. We're representing that same Lord in the heart that's been trying since time immemorial, but now the person has a human body. Maybe it's not the first human body, but you're there for that person now. As Ramananda Roy said to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, my Lord, I cannot think of any greater misfortune than to be bereft of the association of the devotees of the Lord. Now you are there trying to be a devotee in your humble way, but the Lord is with you. The entire disciple succession is behind you, and you're trying to help the living entity understand, break through these illusions of generalizations and specifications. Break through it all. Sometimes we understand that a spiritual master may have a disciple, and that disciple may be very, very advanced. And that disciple may end up becoming the guru of his guru. So we recall in the life of Ramanujacharya, and it's also depicted similarly in the life of Madhvacharya, that they accepted, and of course even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he took sannyasa diksha from, was it Keshava Bharati? Mayavad sannyas. And so these other great acharyas, they took diksha and siksha from someone in the Mayavad line because that was very prominent at the time. But and they maintained the principle of steadfastness and faith in the guru and following the instructions of a guru to the letter. But they were, of course, very advanced Vaishnavas. And that advanced understanding was seen by the guru. And they understood that I'm so grateful to have such an advanced disciple, to have such a saintly disciple. So, of course, our guru is giving us everything. But if we, with firm faith, take the order of the guru as our life and soul, as we just chanted in the prayer to the spiritual master and Guru Vandana. Make the teachings from your lotus mouth one with my heart, and let me desire nothing else. So if we maintain this, and we try to be very sensitive to all the spirit souls out there, you see, in this generalizations and specifications, we've even experienced this in our movement. I remember one time when we didn't experience it so much in our temple. We had a very nice family mood in our temple in Atlanta. The temple president was like a father, and his wife was like a mother to the whole whole temple devotees. And closest sankirtan party, I was a brahmachari for several years, and he was a gahasta, and he had a nice wife and two nice children, and we were sankirtan partners. He would always distribute many more books than I did, and I always had great admiration for him. And I said, how can you do it? You have a wife and two children, and then you're more fired up than anyone else in the temple. And so there was a nice mood amongst them. But, you know, sometimes if the brahmacharis think, all those grihasthas, they're so absorbed in business and material life and everything, you know, or the grihasthas, if they think, those brahmacharis, you know, they're not doing so much service. They're always spaced out. They're just studying and reading and, you know, can't do so many things. So this is not healthy. Of course, we know that's just the complete opposite here. This is the perfect example, the wonderful community here of perfect cooperation, where there's such a healthy attitude, because we don't see that. We don't see this is a grahastha, this is a brahmacharya. Lord Chaitanya said, naham vripo na chagratir napi vaishno na shujo, etc. You know, I'm not a Brahmana or a Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas. I'm not any of these things. I'm just servant of the 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 ocean of bliss, Lord Sri Krishna, the master of the gopis. This is my position. So with this mentality, then we can understand. We can enter into the proper mood, a servant of the servant of the servant of the servant. Everyone is my master, Prabhu. Everyone is my master. And we can understand how there are different levels of seniority. So one may be senior in age, therefore one should certainly offer respect. One may be senior in time spent in spiritual practice. Okay, then one should also offer respect. Also in ashram as well, you know, sannyasis, certainly one should offer respect. And sometimes one is senior in knowledge, or one is senior in example. Then one, that also deserves full respect and admiration. So we can learn from everyone. Chanika Pandit says that even from a fool, a learned man can learn even from a fool. One fool, he's generally a fool, but he has one little tiny bit of knowledge or information or a good example, and one can learn from that. One can, just like a child, may display to us something. He may say something or do something. It's, oh, that is so nice. Well, I think I could do better myself. And one can learn from so many. In married life, the husband instructs the wife, and the wife has so many good instructions for the husband. The wife is many times the best critic and can help to steer the husband in the right way. So it's a partnership. And it's not that, you know, women in Krishna consciousness are women in a materialistic sense of the term. They're actually Vaishnavas on the same level. Spirit souls, servants of Krishna. They're not women. And we're not. So we see on an equal level. And so this is the mentality of a self-realized soul, of a saintly person. He can understand the position. And the position is expressed in words and in actions. And one can never hide anything, ultimately. Everything becomes found out. So we're always praying in a very meek and humble way to please give us the proper mentality by offering full submission to every living entity. Everyone, just like it's understood, Atithi Narayana, an uninvited guest comes, someone that you had no plan, but that is a representative of Narayana. They used to cheapen this, you know. They came up with these terms, Dharidya Narayana, which is nonsense because Narayana is never poor. But every living entity represents Narayana. Just by, you know, false designation, one cannot be such. But one still treats one in a very, very saintly way. So, okay, I'll stop here. If we have any time for any question. Okay, so thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.